Today's sermon comes from the inspiration and ideas of my brother Gary Antion. He was telling me he gave a sermon on Daniel, the sixth chapter, and the lessons that could be learned from that chapter. Now, I didn't know all that he gave. I didn't hear his sermon, but I'm going to give the sermon and the lessons I think we ought to learn from Daniel the sixth. We may overlap. We may have actually the same lessons. I don't know, but the wording will be different. I know that we'll have different words. So I'm going to start in chapter six. You know, all scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for instruction in righteousness, for correction, and so on. So let's see if we have any correction for you or me, and we can take this scripture and apply it the things to ourselves and see what we come up with. Daniel 6, beginning in verse 1. It seemed good to Darius. Now, this is Darius the Mede. You know, they went from Babylon into Mede and Persian Empire. It seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom that would be in charge of the whole kingdom. So let me explain what a satrap was. A satrap, each satrap was virtually a king in his own area. So the whole kingdom was divided into 120 of these little kingdoms. He had his own court. He had absolute civil authority. You know, it's just like if you've ever been in a courtroom, you know that the judge in that courtroom, now he can't come outside that courtroom and tell you what to do, but when you're in his courtroom, he virtually is the king. You have to show respect. He could sentence you to sentence you to jail, because if you don't show respect, or he's called it contempt of court, he can fine you, he can have you jailed. Okay, so these were the same, pretty much the same. They had absolute civil authority, and he answered directly or indirectly to the great king. You know, to Cyrus and Darius. Okay, so Darius and the great king, to ensure the satrap's loyalty to the king, other officials who answered directly to the king were appointed to work alongside the satrap. For instance, a secretary who handled official correspondence. They had a chief financial officer who collected the monies, and a commander of the armed forces, in addition to inspectors known as the eyes and ears of the king, who would sometimes show up without the satrap's knowledge. So they make sure, because the satraps have this little area completely, and he could just run off with it and say, I'm breaking away. So that's what a satrap was. Now, here's the organization. Every place has organizations. Daniel chapter 6, verse 2. And over these, okay, over them, three commissioners, in the King James that has the word presidents, three presidents, of whom Daniel was one. Okay, so with three top people, so you have 120 satraps. These three would probably have 40 satraps reporting to them, and then they reported to the king. So had 40 satraps, that these satraps might be accountable to these three that were much more trusted and right below the king, and had to be accountable to them, that the king might not suffer loss. He would not lose revenue, taxation, or territory, or anything. If any satrap rebelled, man, they would be on top of him quickly and recover whatever, okay? So the president, the commissioners, these are three high officials, of course, one of whom was Daniel. They were accountable to Darius the Mede and to oversee the empire, okay, over these satraps. You'll see organizational structures. You have to have organizational structures. One person can't do everything, so you have to have somebody who can do something similar. Now, you remember the recommendation to Moses of Moses' father-in-law when Moses was trying to hear every single case, he was doing everything he could do by himself. And in chapter 18 of the book of Exodus, you see that the father-in-law saw what he was doing. Moses was there judging the people from morning till evening, every day, hearing every case or every conflict. And the father-in-law saw what he was doing for the people. And he asked him, what are you doing? What is this thing you're doing? You're going to wear yourself out. You're going to wear the people out. And he said, well, Moses said, well, they come to me for judgment. I've got to do it. And he said, no, that's not the way to do it. You will surely, in verse 18, this is Exodus 18, verse 18, you will surely wear out yourself and the people who are with you, for the task is too heavy for you and you can't do it alone. So he says, now listen to me. I shall give you counsel and God will be with you. Now, this is Moses' father-in-law, Jethro. You will be the people's representative before God and you will bring the disputes to God, okay? But here's what you ought to do. You need to teach the statutes and the laws and make them known in the way that they walk and work that they are to do. Furthermore, you shall select out of the people, you know, able men who fear God. These are God-fearing men. These are people committed. These are loyal men, men of truth. They're not subject to lying. Men of truth who hate dishonest gain. Okay, they're not going to steal from you. They don't want that. And you shall place these over as leaders of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, of tens. And that was the organizational structure. Okay, you had one person over 10. He reports to a person over 50. He reports to a person over 100. He reports to a person over 1,000. So that it finally comes up to Moses. And then he says, if you do this, you know, and then let these people judge. And if it becomes a very hard thing, let it come to you and you take the burden with you before God. Okay. That was good advice. And that was organizational structure. Okay. Now, many times you don't need organizational structure. If you're running a one person store, you know, you're in your own store and you run your own place. Well, that's fine. You don't need organization. You might need to organize your items in the store and your the clothing or the stuff on the shelf, but otherwise you don't. So in chapter 6, back again to chapter 6. Now we're coming to verse 3. Then this Daniel, so he was one of the three. This Daniel began distinguishing himself from among these commissioners or presidents, okay? King James uses the word presidents. They were commissioners or supervisors. You could say supervisor. You could say district superintendents. You could say, you know, whatever you want. Area coordinators. You can call them any kind of name you want, but they were over that. So there were three of them, and Daniel began to distinguish himself from among these commissioners and satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit. He was in such a great attitude. He had such a great work ethic. And the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. Now, I don't care what kings plan. I don't care how secretive this thing is. I belonged to an organization years ago that if it was a secret, you know, you told just one person at a time. That was this. Now, a top secret, you told one person at a time, but you told them not to tell anybody else. That was top secret. But let me tell you, it always got out. All the secrets got out. So the king is planning to appoint Daniel because of his extraordinary spirit. Okay. And now these people hear about it. Okay. Look in verse 4, Daniel 6, verse 4. Then the commissioners and the satraps began trying to find a ground, a reason, evidence for accusation against Daniel in regard to governmental affairs. Let's see if we can find. Did he make a mistake? I belonged to an organization one time, and when I came out, that I had jobs, and I didn't realize it, but I realize it now. There was a plan to make me trip up, because they started saying, "Let David Antion have it. Let him put him over this. Put him over that. Put him over this. Put him over that." And pretty soon, I had so much stuff that it was very likely that I would make a major mistake. Thank my God, I did not make a major mistake. And I won approval from those who were trying to trip me up. And then we became good friends and worked together. So here they are looking for something, a ground in his government affairs, but they could find no ground, no evidence of corruption, no reason to accuse him. It is much why? Because he was faithful. And no negligence or corruption was to be found in him. This is what Albert Hubbard said many years ago. This was his advice to people who work. Quote, "If you work for a man, work for him. If he pays you wages, work for him. Speak well of him. Think well of him. Stand by him and stand by the institution he represents." I think if I worked for a man, Albert Hubbard said, I would work for him, and I would not work for him a part of the time, and the rest of the time work against him. I would give undivided service or none. End quote. That's Albert Hubbard's advice when you work for a man. In Daniel chapter 6, now, verse 5. Then these men said, "We will not find any ground of accusation against Daniel." They can't find it in all his work. They can't find it in his governmental work. Unless we find it, listen to this, with regard to the law or the commandment or the decrees of his God. In other words, we are not going to find any reason to accuse him except his religion. We're going to find it in his religion. Could that be said of you? Could that be said of me if we were working in a company? That we won't find any reason to accuse unless we find it. We just find that you know what he does? He keeps the Sabbath. Oh no, you know what he does? He takes off for these annual festival days. You know, he doesn't keep Easter. He keeps the Passover. He doesn't keep Christmas. He does this. Can we find it in any excuse other than religion? Or do such sloppy work for your incompetence? Are you incompetent? You're sloppy. You're lazy. Or whatever. Are you that way that they don't need to find it in your religion? They got it right here. Here's what you do. You make mistakes all the time. You send out the wrong orders. You're not paying attention. You're haphazard at work. You come in late. You leave early. You take extra long lunch hours, and you don't give a full day's work. Or are they going to find it in you? So we need to ask ourselves, do we work? Do we have corruption? Do we have poor quality work? Do we have negligence in our work? Are we careless? Do we do a good job? Do we do such a bad job they don't have to find it in our religion? They'd see it right there. Yeah. You know, when Pontius Pilate interviewed Jesus, you remember, in chapter 18 of John in verse 38. What does he say? After all these accusations these people were making of Jesus, Pilate says, "I find no guilt in him." I mean, I know all these accusations, but I don't find any guilt in him. It's all about there's different things and disagreement of doctrine and so on, but I find no guilt in him. Can that be said of you and me? Okay, or can people find it? I want to give you an example of a man I knew very well. I know very well. It's my father. He told me this when he was an electrician. He worked, you know, there were two ways to work. You could work as a on commercial work. Commercial work paid over a dollar more an hour than house wiring. When he first got his license as a journeyman, he was assigned to do house wiring. He was not assigned to do commercial work. Commercial work paid more, and periodically he would get, you know, they needed extra commercial work, so he would be assigned to commercial work. He worked for Ferry Electric. He knew the boss, Mr. Ferry, and then Mr. Ferry's son. And my dad always called him Mr. Ferry. He was older. My dad was younger at that time, and he worked hard for Mr. Ferry. Well, Mr. Ferry came to my dad and he said, you know, Leo, I'm sorry. I know you've been doing a lot of commercial work. I know you like that and you're making, but we need more men on the house wiring now. And it's going to reduce my dad's his hourly wage by over a dollar an hour in those days. And you'll be surprised what he got paid. I think he got paid $3 and something an hour for housework and $4 and something an hour for commercial work. This is back in the 50s, late 50s, early 60s. And so he said, I'm sorry, Leo, I've got to. You know, take you off of the commercial and put you on. My dad said to him this way, Mr. Ferry, I work for you. You put me where I can do you the most good. Now, that's an extraordinary spirit. You know, most people be kind of, you're like, my dad didn't bother. He said, I work for you. You put me where I can do you the most good. That's the kind of guy he was. My dad never stole. He told me, he said, some of these guys steal. How stupid. He would go to Mr. Ferry. He said, Mr. Ferry, I'm working on something at my home. How much would it cost to buy so many feet of wire, so many of this, so much of this electric transformer? How much would it cost me to buy these things? And Mr. Ferry said, just take it. Nothing. Just don't worry about it. Just take it. My dad said, why would I be stupid enough to steal, risking my job and steal from when if you ask him nice, most of the time he lets you take it home. But my dad was willing to pay for it. You know, you're going to get it a lot cheaper buying from him than you would at a regular place. So when these people find out, because the little birdie tells what he is going to do, the king is going to appoint Daniel over everybody else. They were jealous, envious. They tried to find an accusation, but they couldn't. Chapter 6 and verse 6. Then these commissioners and satraps, whatever they were, now notice the Bible uses the phrase these. It didn't say all. These particular ones who were Daniel's enemies at headquarters. They were all at the central area. They weren't way out in the fields of where the other satraps were. They were there at the headquarters area. And usually the headquarters of any organization, such as even in our nation, the capital of Washington, D.C., is filled with fighting, interfaith, gossip, and all the skullduggery you can imagine. As was any organization, they quote headquarters where the storm and grime and everything else that was mixed in the gossip and the infighting and the jealousies. And, you know, they used to say if you leave the table early at the locker room, you could find that your whole department has been moved out from under you. And it's just a terrible way to be. But anyhow, these commissioners and satraps came by agreement. You know, by agreement in a throng, in a way, to the king, and they spoke to him as follows. King Darius, live forever. That's basically the greetings. It's a superlative, you know. No, we know nobody's going to live forever in this life. King Darius, live forever. And it means that we really respect you. We want you there. So they were not all, they weren't bringing satraps in from far away. They were just right there at the headquarters. Verse 7 now. All the commissioners of the kingdom. Now that's verse 7. Listen to what they're talking to Darius. Oh, King Darius, live forever. All the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the high officials and the governors have consulted together. That was a bold-faced lie. I'm sure they did not consult with Daniel, because Daniel would have said, no, don't do this. So they lied to him. All the prefects, all of us have consulted together that the king should make and establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days shall be cast into the lion's den. They do it, just make it for 30 days. Anybody who does this will be cast into the lion's den. Now, in those days, they dug a pit, a den. It was a pit. And you could put the lions, weed down. They couldn't jump up. They couldn't get out of it because it was too high. They can't make it. They've tried and they fall back down. They can't. So they finally, animals, when they, they used to call a person a flea trainer. You put fleas in a little bottle, and when they try to jump up, they hit their head on the lid enough. And after a while that they won't, you take the lid off, they won't jump out. Many of them, it's called a flea trainer, used to, because they find that they stop. They can train an animal that finally it gives up. Okay. And they did this with strong fish that like to eat little fish. And what they did is put the little fish in tubes, glass tubes. And the tube and the fish, the little fish would swim around this little glass tube. And here's the big fish and wants to get it. And it would strike at the little fish and hit its nose on these strong glass or plastic tubes. And boom, and he couldn't get it. Boom, he couldn't get it. After a while, he just lay there. He just realized, I can't get him no matter what I do. And they pulled the tubes out, and the fish swam all around it, right up against it. You could have grabbed it like that, but they give up. They give up, okay? So enforce this. So they put the lions in these dens, and they put a seal over. You could look down in it. You could look down in it to where people look down. The lions are down in the den. So what are they doing with the king Darius? They are appealing to his ego. Let me tell you something. When you as a ruler have an ego so big, I want to, we're not going to pray. Don't make an injunction. Nobody can pray. We've always said only to you, king. You're the only one we should be able to pray to. What do you think happens? Well, he goes along with it. He is totally subject to making binding injunctions. He does not consider the consequences, the far-reaching consequences of his action. Wow. All we have to do. Now, think about it. So it's 30 days. Suppose you were there. And they say you can't pray or ask God for anything for 30 days. And a lot of us would say, well, boy, we haven't prayed on our, knees. We haven't prayed for a long time. I mean, that 30 days, the government says 30 days. We're not going to do it. We're going to go right along. Just lead us. Tell us what we can do. We don't want to go to church. We don't want to pray. We don't want to get together because the government says we shouldn't do it. So we just do everything we want, the government says. Well, Daniel, no. Okay. So what would you do? Would you continue to pray? Or would you not? Some of us said, well, I haven't prayed for a long time anyhow. 30 days, so I can make it 30 days without praying. Can you make it 30 days? Yes, we probably can. But is it right? That's not Daniel's thing. So in chapter 6, verse 8, now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it may not be changed. They knew what they were doing. They were deceiving him. According to the law of the Medes and Persians, this is chapter 6, verse 8, which may not be invoked. Therefore, King Darius signed the document. That's so flattering of you. You guys just want to pray to me. Oh, that's so nice. And the bigger your ego, the more easily you are to take bad advice, stupid advice and not listen to sound teaching or sound wisdom. That's what happened to, that's how Absalom got it. Oh, no, Absalom, no, you should go down yourself, lead the whole country. You know how you're, in his vanity, that's what he did, and he lost. So the king signed it. The king was duped. Therefore, the king signed the document that is the injunction. Now, chapter 6, verse 10. Now, when Daniel knew that the document was signed. You can't. He hears about it. What did he do? Oh, I guess I better not pray. I guess he didn't care. I'm going to continue doing what I always do. I'm not hurting anybody. He entered into his house, now in his roof chamber. He had windows open toward Jerusalem. So he up there, he opens it. He's looking south. He's up in Babylon area, up in the Persian area. He's looking south, maybe southwest toward Jerusalem. And he continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying. Notice the phrase continued, praying and giving thanks before God as he had been doing previously. He did not interrupt at all his religious observances. He did not interrupt at all his prayer life. He did not interrupt at all his manner of life before God. I wonder what we would do. Now, 1 Kings chapter, you'll see, they did this often. 1 Kings chapter 8. Why is he praying toward Jerusalem? Listen, when they had dedicated the temple and the Holy of Holies and so on, here's what we read. 1 Kings 8, verses 33 and 34. When your people, Israel, are defeated before an enemy, because they have sinned against you, if they turn to you again and confess your name and pray and make supplication to you in this house, then hear from heaven and forgive their sin, the people of Israel, forgive the sin of the people of Israel, and bring them back to this land that you gave to their fathers. So Daniel knew this. He knew what Jeremiah taught. He knew what the dedication was. He knew what the temple meant, and people would pray toward it and go up into their upper rooms and so on. You'll see it in Psalm chapter 28 and verse 2. Hear the voice of my supplication when I cry to you for help, when I lift up my hands toward your holy sanctuary. Hear it, please. And in 1 Kings chapter 17, verses 19 and 20, and he said to him, give me your son. Remember, this is Elisha, give me your son. Then he took him from her bosom and carried him to the upper room. Many times they prayed from an upper room, and he laid him on the bed. He called on the Eternal, my God, that you might it brought this calamity, you know, please help and cause her son to die. And of course the son was healed. In Acts chapter 1, you'll see when the disciples all got together after Jesus resurrection in verse 13, Acts 1, then they all entered into an upper room where they were staying, Peter and John and so on, all of them. And it tells you Acts 1 and verse 13. Acts 10 and verse 9. On the next day, as they went on their way, here's Peter now, and approaching the city, Peter went up on the housetop about the sixth hour to pray. So people went different places, went up to the housetop. Daniel was up in his upper room. He had wide open chambers. People could hear him. They might even hear him pray. They watched. They didn't take long before they knew Daniel was going to do this. They watched him. They knew his manner. And they said, we're not going to find a thing to accuse him of except in a matter of his religion. So in Daniel chapter 6, beginning in verse 11 now, then these men came by agreement like a throng, okay, rushing forward like a throng. And they found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. Then they approached, they rushed and pressed eagerly toward, they approached and they spoke before the king about the king's injunction. And listen, how clever. Did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days is to be cast into the lion's den? The king said, the statement is true. Yeah, I did do that. According to the law of Medes and Persians, which may not be changed. Yes, I did sign that. It can't be changed. Now they slip him the thing that they knew would take place. Then they answered and they spoke before the king. Daniel, who was one of the exiles from Judah. Now that became a racial remark. They wanted to throw in one more thing. He's not from us. This Daniel, he's from Judah. He's a Jew from the, we conquered that nation. He's a foreign, he's an exile. He's not supposed to be, but he's risen up high in the organization. He's risen up high in the country, but he's an exile from Judah. Now, Daniel, who's one of those exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to your injunction, which you signed, but keeps making his petition three times a day. And he knows about it, king. He knows. He's been informed, like everybody else, that you signed this. Now it dawns on the king. A light bulb goes off. Then as soon as the king heard the statement, he was deeply distressed. Oh, no. I signed this. I went along with it. I've been duped. They took me for a ride, He was deeply distressed, and he set his mind now on delivering Daniel. What can I do? Now, wait a second. Is there no exception to the law of the Medes and Persians? Is there some way that we don't have to carry this sentence out? He's checking, okay? Set his mind on delivering Daniel. Even until sunset, he kept, working, checking the files and looking, probably checking with lawyers and so on. Okay? Now he's realized he's been had. Okay, these guys did not want to honor him. That wasn't the reason. They wanted to destroy Daniel. He's now realizing that this was not to honor me. This was to get to Daniel. So, chapter 6 and verse 16, then the king gave orders, and Daniel, he couldn't do it. He gave orders, okay? I got to carry it out. I can't find a loophole. The king gave orders, and Daniel was brought in and cast into the lion's den. The king spoke to Daniel and said, your God, whom you constantly serve, will deliver you. Now, that's not a real true translation. That's not a better translation is Revised Standard Version, which is this, because he didn't have that kind of faith. But here's the way it should be. I think a better translation, okay? This is the Revised Standard Version. The king, this is Daniel 6, verse 16. Then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually deliver you. This is now from the New International Revised Version, and it goes like this. So the king gave the order. Daniel was brought out and thrown into the lion's den, and the king said to him, you always serve your God faithfully, so may he serve you. May he save you. May he. May your God save you. Because he couldn't say your God will. How did he know God will? May your God save you. I hope and I pray and I hope that he will save you because you served him. And then verse 17 of Daniel 6, a stone was brought and laid over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring, his signing ring, with the signet ring of his nobles, So everybody else comes up so that nothing might be changed in regard to Daniel. That is it. Now, here's what they did. They had an opening on the top of the den, okay? They lay a flat stone across that opening. You can't see in. Nobody can put down a rope and pull him out. They can't shoot at the lions. Again, so now the stone is in place. It's sealed. And it's got the king's imprimatur from his ring on it. So it's like it's an official government stamped authority. And nobody is supposed to bother it. Okay? Verses 29, now we come down to verse 18. So here it is. Let me read it from my Daniel 6, verse 18. Then the king gave orders and a stone was brought. Verse 18, then the king went off to his palace and spent the night fasting. And no entertainment was brought. No levity. I don't want any jokes. I don't want any, dancing. I don't want any songs. And no entertainment, no music had brought before him. And his sleep fled from him. He was so troubled, okay, that he couldn't sleep. Verse 19, okay. Then the king arose at dawn. Okay, now he's trouble all night. Did you ever have something bother you so much that he knew he'd been had. He made a very foolish decision based on his ego, and he knew now, this is the guy I wanted to promote, and now he's going to be dying. I don't know what's going to happen. The king arose at dawn, verse 19, at the break of day, and he went in in haste to the lion's den. Okay, now verse 20. And when he had come near to the lion's den, to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. Daniel, he was just some kind of troubled voice. He knew something's happened. You could tell he was upset. The king spoke and said to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God. Now listen to what they called him. The YHWH means the eternal living God, servant of the living God. Has your God, whom you constantly serve. Now, he's probably trying to open this thing. He's talking to him. Has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able? Is he able to deliver you? Is God able? God is able to deliver you from the lions. Now, a lot of people would probably say, you bet, boy, they thought they were going to get me king. I'm telling you, this is great. The lions never touched me all night. I'm fantastic. Not what he did first. The first thing he does is show respect to the king. Okay? Daniel says, O king, live forever. Very respectful greetings to the king. Once again, he never forgot his place. He never forgot what he was supposed to do. No wonder he had such an extraordinary spirit. Then he said, may God send his angel. My God sent his angel and shut the mouths of the lion. Shut the lion's mouths. And they have not harmed me inasmuch. Now listen to this. Inasmuch as I was found innocent before him. Who do we have to be innocent before? God first. You might be accused. You can run afoul of governmental laws, governmental injunctions. But if you're innocent first before God, that's your number one thing. It's easy to run afoul because, there's so many laws. There's a book out called Three Felonies a Day. Three felonies a day. If somebody wanted to look at you, all that you do, everything that you've written, everything that you've done, all your tax returns, everything else, they'd probably find three felonies on you. Three felonies a day is the title of the book. We have so many laws on the books that we could find something you've done that would probably put you in a felonious case. O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth, and they have not harmed me, inasmuch as I was found innocent before him, and also toward you, O king. I have committed no crime. Think about what he's saying. Your injunction that I prayed, even though I knew you said not to, I did not. The word crime here means hurtful acts. I did not do any hurtful act. I never hurt anybody. I minded my own business. And I went up to pray. How is that a crime? How is that a sin? How is that a bad thing to do? You remember, we have to do, what is love? Love is a fulfillment of the law, because love has no harm to its neighbor. I'm not going to harm. I did not do anything bad. I did not do a crime. I did not do anything wrong, he's saying. Inasmuch as I was found innocent before God himself and also towards you, O king, I have committed. Now, he's telling the king, what you signed here was not, it's not really a crime. You signed this thing, but I didn't do anything. And also toward you, O king, I have committed no hurtful act. The injunctions by government do not make something a crime. Do not make something sinful. Just because people can pass little injunctions about you got to do this, you got to do that, that doesn't make it a crime. It doesn't make it anything bad. Daniel now, chapter 6, verse 23. Then the king was very pleased. Very pleased. Even though Daniel's telling him, you signed that. That didn't make it wrong. That didn't make it a crime. Then the king was very pleased. He gave orders for Daniel to be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury was found on him because he had trusted in his God. He had to have faith. He had to say, whatever you want, I trust you. I'm throwing myself into you. I can't do anything. I can't stop them from throwing me into this lion's den. I can't do it. But I trust you, O God. I trust you, O Father. Yes. Because he had faith. He had faith. He trusted in God Almighty. Do you have faith? Do I have faith? Do we have faith? Could we endure that and say, well, they're going to throw us in and they're going to kill us. They're going to do it. And we throw ourselves on the mercies of God, trusting in him, whatever. Just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You remember when they were there? If you want to throw us in, you can throw us in. But we're still not going to bow down, even if we're not bound down to your God. Even if you throw us in. Even if God doesn't rescue us. We trust God. That's faith. That's faith. Daniel chapter 6 now in verse 24. Then the king gave orders. Now, I'll tell you something. Revenge in the old time was not pleasant. Revenge. Now, the king knows he's been duped. He knows he's been had. He knows he was lied to. He knows that this whole thing was a scam, not for him, but to get Daniel. So the king gave orders, and they brought those men, not all the satraps, but those men right there at their headquarters area, the capital of the nation, who had maliciously, without even any word, accused Daniel. And they cast them. It was cruelty back then. Their children and their wives into the lion's den. And they had not reached the bottom. Now, these lions have not eaten now. And they saw Daniel there, but the angels would not let them do it. So they had not eaten. They were viciously hungry. And those people, as they were thrown down into this pit, never even reached the bottom till the lions were grabbing them and crushing them, okay? It crushed their bones. It overpowered them and crushed their bones. Lions weigh around 500 pounds. You know, you have a female lion or a male lion, and they weigh about 500 pounds. Their jaws powerful. Their paws scratching you, grabbing you. When you're overpowered so fast, it would not even be funny. Overpowered. The world was cruel. The old world was very cruel back then. You know, we would say no. You know, today, of course, we don't even put a deranged criminal, somebody who kills little children or strangles women or so. Oh, no. We've got to feed them and keep them. And not, we wouldn't do anything like that. We're so, quote, civilized. But we got lots of crime now because when sentence against an evil deed is not quickly done, says the book of Ecclesiastes, that then the hearts of the sons of men are fully set to do evil. That's not all the sons of men. You wouldn't do evil even if they don't punish you right away. You would be thankful. But not psychopaths, not criminals who have a criminal mind. They don't care. They think if they can get away with it, they'll do more of it. No matter how kind you are to some people, they are going to hurt you. That's what we find out. Serial killers, people, they would kill you. Geraldo Rivera went into prison and talked to a man who was a killer and all that. And Geraldo said something, you know, if you were on the outside, the guy said, yeah, I would have to kill you. I would kill you. Yeah. Amazing. The king gave orders and they were smashed and crushed. Then Darius the king wrote to all the peoples, the nations, the men of every language who were living in the land. May your peace abound. I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God, that's Allah, of Daniel. That's the Aramaic word, Allah. For he is the living God and enduring forever. And his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. He delivers. You know, he knows it's a living God. It's not one of these statues. It's not one of these mummies. It's not one of these things you make up and carve out of wood or put a stone up and carve a face on it. He delivers and rescues. He performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. That same one who also delivered Daniel from the power of lions. And the king was there to attest to it. He saw Daniel thrown in. He saw Daniel taken out, unharmed. And notice, so this Daniel. Now Daniel's now, it's got to be close to 80 years old in his 80s. So this Daniel enjoyed success in the reign of Darius, and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Cyrus the Persian was the more dominant. And Cyrus the Persian was the one who made the decree for the children of Israel, of Judah, to go back to their homeland. And then you see what happens when you see Ezra and Nehemiah trying to repair the temple and the walls and so on. So Daniel enjoyed success. And the name of God, whatever his qualities were, the living God, was pronounced and spread all over. And it was done. All this was done for two reasons. Daniel was innocent, and Daniel had faith, and Daniel, Daniel continued his prayer. He knew he was innocent. Can you tell the difference when you are really guilty? People, I know people feel guilty when they don't do anything to anybody. I've had to tell many clients, you should not feel guilty unless you've hurt somebody. We often feel guilty for other reasons, you know, for silly reasons that are not hurtful. You didn't do anything wrong, okay? You didn't do anything to hurt anybody. Because of Daniel's faith, because of his obedience, because of his hard work, because he dedicated himself and had an extraordinary spirit, we have this wonderful story. and all its lessons. Join me in prayer as we end the services today. Father in heaven, the living God, the almighty, the caring God, the loving God, and the God who executes judgment in the earth to those who are disobedient, who hate him, and who hate his people. We give you thanks now for everything, and we give you the praise and the honor and the glory. We appreciate everything from your word and for the lessons that we can draw and the correction for ourselves and the instruction in righteousness. We praise your holy name. We thank you for everything. We give you all the glory now. We pray for the people. We pray for young Logan Brown and Father, for others struggling with all these things like Parkinson's and so on, such terrible things in our society today, and diseases that come up that we can hardly find a cure. We give you thanks now for everything. We give you praise. We know that you hear the petitions of your people, and we petition you gratefully, openly, and glorifying your name, because we love you, and we know who you are, and we trust in your word. We give you this now and pray in Jesus' holy and precious name. Amen.